When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Joe, we are back in Newport Beach once again. Let's go down to the harbor. How about the safe harbor?
Nah.
Joe.
Already.
First major note I have here is that Summer, for Summer being a super genius, she doesn't understand semesters. Because she said, hey, it's our last semester. And I don't think that that's true because it's January. Aren't semesters broken into four quadrants?
No, that's quarters. There are two quarters in a semester. This is their last semester because, like, the end of the term, it's a 16 or 18
semester.
Week term.
Okay. Yeah. Man, now I sound like a dumb dummy. Well, okay. I'm also going to call BS that they're not doing the school photo until the beginning of spring semester because that doesn't seem to make any sense to me either.
Yeah.
That's usually the first day of school type activity, to be honest.
Yeah. Also, just like, I mean, not to get ahead of it, but like that freaking like you realize how like that this is a private school because they fit the entire class, which looks like maybe less than 100 people, less than 50 people. Maybe
that looks like 40 people tops.
Yeah.
Like so, yeah, let's jump into this real quick, because last week I sang a lot of praise of how much I loved this That's What Friends Are For ending with the Chrismica episode. And they almost try to get that exact same vibe at the end of this episode, but it just does not work at all for me this time.
Yeah.
And I call major bullshit. This is understandably television.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that this school is like, you know who should be dead center of this photo is Summer, Marissa, Ryan, and Seth. Let's plop Taylor. Let's plop the five of them dead center in front of the class of 06 banner or whatever it is. Like, I was like, no fucking way that's what they want. Like, not a chance. That bothered me so much. But it made me think of a very funny story, which is I still have all my high school yearbooks and my junior year, usually the yearbook is just like the cover of the yearbook is just a photo of the school or like, you know, even less than that. It's just like a blue cover with like the insignia of the school mascot or whatever. My junior year, someone had the genius idea of, hey, during the homecoming prep rally, let's just take a photo of a bunch of students in the stands and that'll be the cover of the yearbook. And so not only there was a couple things that went wrong here, right? So
okay.
So for my junior year, the cover of the yearbook was a photo of a bunch of random sophomores and juniors, not a single senior to be found on the cover of their senior yearbook. But even more complicated was that between the time that photo was taken and the yearbook was printed, the four kids in the front row were all expelled and or dropped out of school. So, like, the front of the book is just kids who were kicked out of school, basically.
Damn.
Yeah. No, I think it was just bad timing because the kids were put in the front for the teachers to keep an eye on them in the front row of the stands. And then that just happened to be the main faces that you see on this yearbook. But yeah, that I call BS on that, but we have a long way to go before we get there. So this is another episode where there's only really one major plot point that has like tiny little branches stemming out of it. Mm-hmm. But the basic vibe is all of a sudden now, because there's a photo being taken, Summer's gotten onto the same thing that I've been saying for 10 episodes, it feels like. Why isn't Marissa back in the school? So now it's like, oh, Marissa's got to be in our class photo. We've got to try to convince the entire school board to let her come back now, essentially just for her to be in the school photo. At one point, Summer like is giving Seth a hall pass to sleep with Taylor if it means it's... Where was this best friend love for the last 7 episodes of this show? Like, it makes no sense why it's all happening now. But that's the main thing, is it's like, let's get Marissa back to school. Let's jump through any hoops that we really need to do. And on top of that, we're getting more Johnny stuff. And I'm like, I'm over it. Like, I am so over the Johnny stuff. I know that one of my biggest complaints has been that the OC does not draw out storylines and it doesn't let storylines simmer. They mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. But maybe this is why they don't, because this is being handled so poorly. And like, this poor fucking kid is just getting jerked back and forth all the time. And it's like, no wonder he's going through depression, because how many times can this kid be on the surf team but not be on the surf team in like a 5-episode run? Like, it is infuriating.
Yeah.
And fuck you, Johnny. I'm going to throw a giant fuck you, Johnny. Chili should be the person going with you from day one.
Yeah.
Like this dude has been your day one buddy, has trained with you, and you're like, I get to bring one person with me, and I want it to be you, Marissa Cooper. Like, shut the fuck up, Johnny. Like,
it's so manipulative, too, because it's like, because he knows, just like, it's one of those things where it's like, I can't really feel sorry for you, sir, that you're all lovelorn and heartbroken because it's unrequited. But like, you're also, one, being a shitty friend to Chili, and two, just like, you let it be, like, just let it go. Like, she's not.
Well, and then he gets shitty with Ryan when he's like, oh, you prep school kids. And Ryan's like, motherfucker, you know that I've been a public school kid for most of my life. Like, don't give me that nonsense. And then I guess, like, I'm still a little confused by the ending of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Johnny, I'm assuming Johnny lied to Chili that they were back on to go to this surfing thing so that Chili would tell Marissa that, so that Marissa would go to the hearing and go back to school. But then it's revealed that he's actually not back on the surfing thing, like, which, again, just is fucking more heartbreak for Chili. Who's just being passed all around like a fucking ping pong ball.
Well, Chili, like, looked like he was being a bro in that moment. Like, he was like, hey, I really need you to help me get Marissa out of the school. And he just, like, straight up lies to her, which is fantastic. Just, like, I can't even with that whole premise. It's very, like, it's giving, like, Teresa season 2, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Big Teresa season 2 energy right now.
What they're setting it up for is, like, in an alternate universe, Teresa and Johnny get together, and then eventually Marissa and Ryan will see them out, and, you know, not only will Johnny not be surfing, but Teresa will have a child that looks like Ryan.
Yeah. And Ryan's like, man, Johnny and Teresa got to work quick.
Yeah.
Look at that baby. We also deal more with Taylor's mom, and I'm almost extra confused by Taylor's mom's energy, knowing that she's on the board. Like, because when we first met her, when Taylor was doing the lock-in, she seemed like her whole vibe was an unattentive parent that doesn't appreciate her daughter's intelligence.
Yeah.
But now she's a super involved mom. Like, not even just to, like, it's just so weird. And then she's like, I got Marissa kicked out of this school so that you could have friends. But now she's upset that Taylor has friends. Like, it's just like nothing. Her motivations don't really lock into any type of logic, which is very frustrating. I did really enjoy the hearing situation. It, I mean, it is your classic, like, kids versus adults, with like the one adult fighting for them type circumstance. I really thought that Marissa wasn't going to get let in. I thought that this was going to be like a bummer ending. You know, Joe, I've been given these stars. I gave this 2 stars. I was not a fan of most of this.
Is this
episode
out of a five star scale?
Out of a 5-star scale, yeah. So I gave this 2 stars, but you said that you actually liked this one quite a bit. So I want to hear your perspective on this as the super fan.
So here's why I like this one. I like it because it's so fucking ridiculous, right? Like, all the reasons you hate it are the reasons why I like it, because it is camp. Like, this is the, you know, this is the toxic queer thing where we like things that are trash because of, you know, it's camp. Like, the thing that I love about it is that it really taps into some, like, very, like, niche soap opera tropes. Private investigator. We get a private investigator who finds we have information that you could potentially use to blackmail somebody. You have a judge being the head, like, the chair of the board of trustees and conducting the board meeting as if he is it's his fucking courtroom, which, like, I was living for that. I also love it because, like, there's no reason for him to do that. Like, as someone who works at a nonprofit, that's not how nonprofits work.
Yeah.
Like, the arcane rules of the students are not allowed to speak to the board. Like, how is that? Like, how, like, that does not seem rooted in any reality. and I say that as, like, we are living in a time where, like, school board meetings are, like, a legit place where, like, the politics of our country and the polarization are, like, unfolding, right? Like, you have fucking Moms for Liberty out here trying to get, like, you know, trans kids to not use the bathroom, and what has been the most impactful is when, like, the students of that school are getting up there and saying, these moms are fucking awful, they don't speak for us, they speak for their own agendas. And so to see it, like, you know, 20 years ago, with a lens of 20 years ago, is just so fascinating. And to me, I'm like, that can't be right at all. Also, this is the episode where I start, like, this is the episode where I really start to love Dr. Kim.
Yeah. No, Dr. Kim's cool. I've never had a beef with Dr. Kim. We do get even more of the Julie Cooper and Summer's dad storyline heating up, because they both have things that they need to tell their daughters, but they don't know how to break it. And Summer's like, yeah, I kind of figured. You know what I mean? Like, Summer's like, I'm 18 years old. I know that it's weird for my mom to be gone this long. Like, obviously, she's left us.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
Julie's similar. Like, Marissa's just like, yeah, that's fine. Like, I don't care where you live. Like, I get it. It's rough. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's classic, like, parents building up something to be way worse than it is, except that's normally a kid situation coming up to the parent. It's really doing a very subtle thing of, like, the parents are, the kids are the adults and the adults are the children type storytelling, which, whatever. But,
yeah,
I mean, this is so far from the worst that I've seen. Any time that Dean Hess isn't there, which is most of the season, is a leg up. Like, nothing is upsetting me as much as, like, the Dean Hess and the Charlotte stuff at the start of this season.
Mm-hmm.
This season starts off abysmal.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely abysmal. Obviously, we're at the halfway point of this season, I think, or close to it. I guess who's going to inevitably be, like, the big bad will be introduced or reintroduced or whatever soon.
See, you're learning. You're learning that some people are not done yet.
No, I was listening to the episode that we put out today, and I was like, I don't feel perfectly fine that's the end of Volchek just yet. So I'm sure that there's going to be more from him. But I think that we're going to get through all of this Johnny story first,
mm-hmm.
however that may end, and then they'll reintroduce everything else.
Pray tell, Matt, how do you think it's going to end with Johnny?
Well, I'm confident from a thing that you gave, a tidbit of information you gave me way earlier, that Johnny will die. I just don't know if it'll be by his own hand or from, like, dumb fuckishness or through the hands of Volchek. Like, but I feel like we're getting close to wrapping that all up.
Let's just put it this way. He doesn't die the same way at the same time that Marissa will die.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. So he's not making it to the end of the season. But, like, I just kind of feel like from here on out, as much as I don't like season 3, I think it started with, like, frustratingly bad, mm-hmm. and now it's kind of just, like, treading water boring at worst. Like, it's like whatever. Like, I think that's why that Chrismica episode worked so well for me last week, was that it was just, like, a very isolated, wholesome kind of episode. I don't know, man. Like, in a perfect world, they wouldn't have shown us that the Johnny surf contest was a lie.
Yeah.
And this would have been the series finale of the episode, right? Like, it was just like, Marissa's back, everybody's happy, Johnny and Chili are going to go surfing, and everyone has a happy ending.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching, folks. Like, we'll see you in 10 years for the reunion.
Yeah.
Like, and then just move on. But obviously that's not where this is going whatsoever.
But it would be that thing that, like, Cobra Kai does now, where the season finale is in the middle of the school year, but then they don't, they haven't, like, finished out telling the story, and the kids are just growing up.
But I feel like at this point, if you stopped it right here,
mm-hmm.
there's not that much story left to tell.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, Summer knows that her mom's not coming back, and she's okay with it. Julie has told Marissa where she's living, and Marissa's okay with it. Taylor now is part of this friend group firmly established. Like, mm-hmm. again, in the alternate world, Johnny and Chili are, like, going to chase their surfing dreams, and, like, everybody's getting ready to wrap up the school year as a group and off to college. Like, it feels like such a perfect spot to tie all of it together. But there's 14 more episodes of this season and then a whole other season left to go. Like,
what are we doing? What are we doing?
I feel like I'm sitting here thinking, this is the last time I'm going to like what's happening at the end of episodes for a really long time. I just, it's two upbeat endings in a row. Oh boy, Joe, they pampered me because that is not happening again until ever, maybe. Like, who knows?
Yeah. And, like, everything post-Chrismica, right, is always downhill because this is when, like, the second half of the season, and I can probably say this with certainty that you'll agree with me, the second half of the season of the OC, because there's just so many episodes, is that is what becomes the defining parts of this season.
Yeah. I think that if I just watched the first half of every season of the OC, I'd be like, this is the greatest show ever. Like, just watch up to Chrismica and then start the next season. I'd be like, this show's great. Everyone's happy. Things are going well. There's a couple little rough patches, but otherwise everyone's great. Well, Joe, one thing that I'll say about this episode, it certainly had songs. And it kicks off the opening scene. We're listening to Phantom Planet cover the song Our House by Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Mm-hmm. Gang of Four, I Love a Man in Uniform, plays when Seth and Summer bump into Ryan as he's about to try to plead his case. Francine's Albany Brownout plays when Summer and Seth are convincing Taylor to join them on this this campaign. Magnet's unnecessarily slow cover of Dancing in the Moonlight plays when they're in the cafe planning out what to do. And then the last song is a group called Rogue Waves singing a different song called California, not to be confused with the theme song of the show California. Joe, for this one, I just wrote down Our House, the cover of Our House that kicks off the episode. I actually I've had this cover on my computer for years and didn't know that it was like for this. I always like that song. I like Phantom Planet. This was kind of a very easy one to choose for me.
Yeah. This is the one that I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like that's a different take on a cover. But I honestly like the song that plays at the end. I like California because it is also just like, it's also just so quintessentially California. Like,
yeah,
a bunch of white kids. Like, it's very Abercrombie ad.
Yeah.
It's giving Tommy Hilfiger. It puts you in that like Westfield Mall circa 2004 Hollister Aeropostale, you know, aesthetic. And I actually really appreciated that.
Nice. All right. So we're going to talk about some pop culture real quick. Speaking of Aeropostale, and I'm going to say that my pop culture thing actually is a book that I read recently and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It's by an author named Rob Harvella, who is a writer and podcaster for The Ringer. And this is a book inspired by his podcast on The Ringer called The 60 Songs That Explain the 90s. And what he's done in this book is he breaks down all of these different songs from the 90s in separate categories. So it'll be like the angry songs, and it'll be like Metallica and Green Day and stuff like that. And then it'll be like girl power, and it'll just be all highly important 90s songs by female vocalists. But he's very funny. It's very unique and interesting the way he structures it. It reminds me a lot of a Chuck Klosterman book, which is, you know, my favorite essay writer still is Chuck Klosterman. So if you are listening to the OC, there's a good chance you are a pop culture nerd and a music nerd. And boy, is this the perfect book for you. So go and grab 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, because I've read it once. I've reached out to the author. He's actually going to be doing Weird Algorithm in the near future.
Yes.
And I'm probably going to read it again. Like, it's one of those books where I had such a good time and laughed so much reading it that I do want to, like, sit down and read it a second time. So that's my quick plug for that. The first book I read in 2024, actually.
Nice.
So, Joe, how about you? What is your pop culture promotion?
I recently finished the new Amazon series, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Ooh, it's a good one.
You know what? I'm not.
It's an okay one, actually, is what I'll say.
I'm not entirely sure how I feel about it. Like, it is very, I love, like, it reminds me of what my favorite parts of Modern Love, the Aziz Ansari show, like, did. Where it's just like, it's very meditative character study about two people set against the backdrop, right, of like, they're spies that are like, they show up and they're married. Like, it's just, it's very wild in that sense. And then, like, when the, and then towards the end, it gets really violent. But what I love about the entire series is that we get to, like, ogle at the beauty that is Donald Glover.
Yeah.
As a human man, that is a lot of drip and swag and riz and in insert every, you know, current Gen Alpha, Gen Z, Gen Alpha word. Because he, like, one of the things of his character is that John is, like, into fashion. And he's just, like, every scene, he's just, like, looks so well styled. And there's, like, oh, he's just so beautiful. I can't stop looking at it.
That's Dong Lover for you, man. He is the best. No, I thought that was a lot of fun. I'm still torn. It's definitely one of those shows where if we get a... I feel like my enjoyment hinges on, like, if there's a second season. Honestly, you know what I mean? Like, it's like... And I don't know. A second season could make it worse or it could make it better. I don't want to, like... give too much away one way or the other, but I think it's an interesting show. It does remind me a lot of how there was, like, two or three episodes that I'm like, this is like an episode of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like, it's very like meditative. Mm-hmm. I've said this before. I'm ready for Donald Glover to follow in the footsteps of Jordan Peele and start making some really out there horror films, because he has such an interesting visual eye and paces very tense scenes extremely well. So I don't know if I'll ever rewatch Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I didn't hate my time watching it, but I think there was multiple times when watching it with the girlfriend where we both were like, these are the worst spies in the world.
Yeah.
They are so bad at, like, keeping cover or, like, following rules or following instructions. Like, but yeah, no, I think it's worth watching, though. It's definitely, I think it's more of a filmmaker show than just a general spectator show. Because the stuff that I liked was like, wow, that was shot interestingly, or that was, like, paced interestingly, or even something like us not seeing what their second failure was. We just have to, like, infer what it was through other means.
Sure.
Is really unique. That was a good one. That's a good pick, though, because I would have brought that up probably in a week or two if you hadn't. So, Joe,
yay.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, a show definitely not about white people problems. But boy, is the OC about them in spades. So stay tuned next week while we talk about even more of those white people problems.
Listeners, I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, FemmeRegard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.